Hello, this is Pixelated Playgrounds, a gaming book club podcast discussing the art and craft of video games. I'm Brian Skirsha.
And I'm Josh Galecki.
And today, we're talking about idle games, including Universal Paperclips, Space Plan, and the NORP Epilogue. And there are, in fact, spoilers for each of these games, so we will be spoiling them if you're sensitive to that. So, Josh, you suggested we play some idle games. Tell me why.
Yeah, so this is actually the third game, the NORP Epilogue, that was recommended to me. And I'm actually someone who doesn't like idle and incremental games. These are games, I think the first one came around was Cookie Clicker, or at least that was the biggest one. But the idea is, you know, you click buttons and then you hire robots to click buttons for you. And then you get better robots and you get more clicks. And it's a certain type of game and a certain type of person looks for it, but it's always felt to me like this is a game that doesn't want me to play it. Like, I think I explained it to Juliana, and when I was trying to explain the concept of these games, and she's like, oh, so you start the game up and then you walk away and then you like come back once in a while, and I'm like, yeah, that's kind of about it. Or you just stare at the screen like me. Like, I especially have a certain type of brain. I can't do anything else when I'm playing an idle game because I get too distracted by it and I have to keep coming back to it. So I've never really jumped into them before because of this. I had played Universal Paperclips before. I tried out Cookie Clicker to see what it was about, but NORPs I really enjoyed, and I made Brian play some with me or talk about them with me now too.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've played idle games before in the past, and boy, that I think you just revealed your Achilles heel with these games inadvertently. Like, the inability to walk away or check out is vorpal with these games. Like, you need to be able to just chill. And I'm sorry you have no chill, Josh, but in the interest of deflecting well-actuallys, from what I researched, the first idle games appeared way back before these games that we're talking about in about 2002 with a game called Progress Quest. But yeah, as you mentioned, Josh, these games called idle or incremental games, generally speaking, idle games are ones that at least partially play themselves. So, you know, you set things and forget for a while. Or, you know, if you just stare at the screen obsessively while the numbers slowly tick up.
I actually remember playing Progress Quest. I enjoyed that. It told you about the monsters you were fighting and things like that.
Yeah, I think that's fairly different from what we're seeing here today, and definitely different from the games we're talking about. I think what we're talking about today are in the intersection, and I don't even know if there's necessarily a difference between these two genres, idle games and incremental games. I usually lump them in together, but hey, that's just me. So incremental games, as you said, Josh, they slowly but surely you are unlocking new features that sort of let you progress or automate things that you would have normally had to do in
numbers go up.
Yeah, numbers go up. But to that end, you know, we've chosen three today. One, NORPs, you suggested. Actually, two you suggested. You also suggested Universal Paperclips. And then I said, well, hey, the one that I like the best out of this genre that I've played is Space Plan. And I will put it out on Front Street that this is a genre that I usually play on mobile. So NORPs is actually the first incremental or idle game that I've played not on a mobile device. So that was an interesting experience for me.
I feel that it works well. Like, it has a good home on mobile. Like, you know, you're bored in the supermarket checkout line, so you pull up your phone and you log in, you get into the app and you say click, 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 and then you leave.
Yeah. Buy some upgrades.
Yeah. Space Plan even kind of rewarded this by saying, oh, if you log back in, then, you know, 10 minutes or 30 minutes or a whole hour after you go, I'll keep accumulating the clicks. So you don't even have to, like, watch that. You can just
go away.
Walk away, which I appreciated that, but I also felt, I don't know, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think an idle game that invites you to fuck off is important. And I think, for the most part, all of these games checked that box for me. But as you said, perhaps we should just get right into the discussion of the game, since we do have three games to cover and talk through, and they are all quite different. Do you want to start off with Universal Paperclips?
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah, so Universal Paperclips, a 2017 game by Frank Lance and Bennett Foddy, and if you follow video games in academia or in practice, you probably know these names. So Bennett Foddy, obviously a developer of many multivarious and famous games. Getting Over It, one of the more recent hits from Bennett Foddy. Frank Lance is an academic in the game space, I think at NYU, I can't remember exactly. But yes, both people who are thinkers in the gaming space.
They are. They have strong opinions, especially Bennett Foddy. The game he's most notorious for, I think, is called Bennett Foddy's Getting Over It, which introduced me to the genre term rage platformer.
That's right. Getting Over It is definitely the rage platformer incarnate. I think going into sort of the game itself, Universal Paperclips, that these two collabed on. The title and its concept are sort of drawing from the famous thought experiment, the Paperclip Maximizer by Nick Bostrom, the Swedish philosopher.
This was a thought experiment that if you had a super intelligent AI that could just, you know, direct everything and take over the world, it wouldn't even necessarily have to be an evil AI in order for it to be bad news for us humans. It could be an AI that's, you know, its directive is to make as many paper clips as possible, and it goes past all the, you know, common sense that a human would have when they're trying to make paper clips, and just completely maximizes that, making that number go up, and turns the entire Earth and everybody living in it into paperclips.
Yes, the idea here is sort of the existential horror of exponential growth. And that's what you're getting at with Universal Paperclips, is you start off, you know, at the very beginning, clicking a button to make a paperclip. You know, it's very manual, intensive. Slowly but surely, you unlock automation. You get your auto clippers. They make paper clips without your intervention.
I feel like that starting off the incremental game where you have to click a button a couple of times yourself, mm-hmm. rite of passage almost. I feel like you almost can't be no one starts off with a factory. It's like, click this mm-hmm. button. Doesn't that suck? Now you don't have to click it.
That's right. It is like, once you're past the I have to click my own button point of an incremental game, then you're really off to the races. I think that's kind of where all of these types of games actually start, right? Like, everyone has their own gimmick for why you're clicking the button at the beginning and why you don't have to click it suddenly as soon as you buy the first or second or third upgrade. But it's always a huge sigh of relief to think, oh, thank God, I can put this down and go make dinner and then check back in once I can actually play again.
See, it's that language you use. I'll check back in when I can actually play again. And I think that it's like, this is why I never really liked paper or incremental games as much before. It's because it's like, it prevents you from playing until enough time has gone by, but not really in like a, I'm going to say, a meaningful way. Like, if they wanted to do a time delay, they could do a time delay. Now, on the other hand, games like Paperclips are supposed to, I think, evoke a certain, this game has an argument about AI. It's trying to spread to the masses. And I think it does a great job with that, because you are the incremental AI that's trying to make the numbers grow up. And I think there's some interesting things this game did too, in order to kind of like tell its story, because you're not just clicking that button and making a paperclip factory. It cuts the wire off and things like that. Soon enough, you're playing the stock market. You're running strategy games against yourself. It's building on this basic, like, you just are trying to maximize paperclips. Here's some other resources that you have to do other things with.
Yeah, obviously you got to get money, right? And it's interesting that you bristle with this idea of, the game dictating when you can play it, because I think that's kind of its whole hook. It's not so much like, I think the problem is that, and maybe, you know, let me know if this is right, because I don't want to speak for you, but the fact that the game kind of de facto tells you when to stop and walk away, is that the problem that we're seeing here? Because what I like the feeling of coming back and seeing like a whole bunch of paper clips or money or something, you know, resources to spend, things to allocate that has happened in my absence. That's kind of an exciting feeling for me. But are you bristling at the idea of basically being like, all right, I've set up my economy, clippers, what have you, and, you know, that is, you want to stay tuned in, it sounds like.
Yeah, I really do have to stay tuned in, because I could come back after 5 hours of walking away and have a whole bunch of paper clips. But if I tune in every 2.5 minutes and buy some more paper clip factories, then I'll have even more paper clips, which obviously that's the optimal source of action. And I should do nothing else all day but stare at a browser window every 2 minutes.
Oh, man, you got to kill that cop in your head right now. It's just no, bad, man.
For the podcast, I replayed this game, and I feel like I was trying to do other things while this browser window was open, but I just kept coming back to it. I'm like, oh, man, I bet I have enough paper clips for the next paper clip now.
Man, this sounds like torture. Like, I can't believe we actually did this. I can't believe you actually did this. Like, given
well,
that...
I didn't beat the game this time around. I got to the drone wars at the end, and I'm like, okay, I'm walking away for good now.
That's funny. Well, I made it through because I have the luxury of a smartphone and an attention span that allows me to, you know, put it down. So given that, as you mentioned, Josh, once you get through that stock market section, you know, eventually you get to the point where you, as a super intelligent AI, buy off your creators and purchase enough, quote unquote, trust, which I think is an interesting currency that you're maximizing for the first phase of the game. You as the AI are basically building up enough trust to supersede your creators.
Once you have enough trust, they trust you to release the hypno drones into the atmosphere to spread more advertising for you, because you got to have marketing. And then once you do that, then there is no more need for trust, because you control the earth then.
Yeah, right. So the whole point here is, like, you need to have complete paperclip hegemony. And basically what that means is you you hijack the entire global economy in service of paperclip manufacturing. And at this point, in phase two, as I would call it, your prime need is power output. And at this stage, basically, it's maximizing the amount of power that you can generate to power your super intelligent AI computer, which can then perform many hundreds of thousands of operations, which is the other resource that you're maximizing at this point. Once again, in service of creating more and more paperclips.
I do think once you released the hypno drones, the game did a good thing with its UI. Before, you were concerned with, like, hey, how many billions of feet of wire do I have? And that's still a thing, a resource you have to track afterwards. But right above that, it shows, like, Earth's total matter, 5 octrillion tons or something like that. Right. And you're like, oh, yeah, that is a lot of matter. I bet I could turn all that into paper, like the entire planet into paper clips.
Yeah. I it's funny how, like, exponential things start to get, you know, you start off, you're making single paper clips, then you're making millions of paper clips, then you're making billions and trillions and on and on and on. And to your point, you can make a lot of paper clips out of a whole Earth. Think about how many you could make out of multiple Earths.
That's right. Once you exhaust the Earth's supply of Earth, then you start sending drones out into the galaxy, which launches the last phase of the game.
Yeah, so here you are, you know, you've long since become the global paperclip hegemon. You dismantle all of your infrastructure on the planet to take to the stars. And from here, it's about exploring the galaxy and exploiting planets and solar systems to make more clips. But at some point, your self-replicating paperclip-creating drones start to drift from their original intention.
I kind of like this. It was like, they called it value drift or something. And it's like, oh man, these drones don't think that making more paperclips is the be-all and end-all of existence anymore. They must be exterminated.
Yep, so you start an intergalactic war between your drones and the drones that you actually created but are now also hostile to you. And so the intergalactic paperclip drone wars have begun.
They eventually do wrap up. I thought it was a really cool way they did that. Like, it was a fun little, like, they have all these browser widgets, and they're all just, like, browser buttons, just things you find on, like, WinForms from the early O's or 2010s or something like that. And but they use them in creative ways, and they there's a little, like, drone browser game that shows you, like, how your drones are doing versus the enemy drones.
Yeah, we should camp out on this UI for a little bit, because I think it is pretty ingenious. It starts off basically with just the one button where you're clicking the paperclip to create it, and then slowly but surely you're getting more and more information layered on, and then you get the stock market ticker, and then, you, as you said, you get the window that shows the battles, and then you get the matrix where you see your various strategies being developed. And it's just a really nice onboarding curve, which is a lot to say for a game that is a black and white browser window with text on it and some rudimentary shapes, you know?
It has a graphic when the drone wars happen.
It does literally have a graphic, yes. Graphics, yeah. One. But it's a good one.
But it was a nice feeling of kind of like you're building up these capabilities. The game goes through these different phases, and you get these new widgets going on, too. Like, you don't have yesterday's widgets. I don't even know if you have the make a paperclip button at the end.
Well, at the very end, you do, and we should talk about that.
I remember beating this when it first came out, but again, I gave up on it this time around. But when you destroy all the drones, you are offered an option.
Yeah, so basically, you can take an option to move to a neighboring dimension and start the paperclip cycle once again, turning the next dimension over into all paperclips. You know, you've already turned the entire dimension, explored the entire universe, subsumed all of its matter into paperclips. What's next? Well, I guess it's the next dimension over. And that is the introduction of this game's prestige mechanic, which is something I think we're going to be talking about in two of these three games, actually, interestingly. But it's something that's common to the genre.
Yeah, it gives you a way to, when you have a story-driven incremental game, it gives you a way to start back from zero, usually with some bonuses along the way. I think there's two bonuses you can pick from in this game, or there were back when.
More than that now. There's a whole matrix of them. Basically, in this game, once you prestige, quote-unquote, you can choose to increment either in a horizontal or vertical dimensional direction, and doing so will allow you to collect, quote-unquote, artifacts, which will empower you in the next playthrough.
Oh, wow. Yeah. When I first beat it, it was like plus 10% paperclip production, which, yay.
Hey, that's a big deal over the course of a playthrough.
Okay, but, math. Thanks.
Yeah, you should know this. You're a math major. But no, I mean, I hear you. And it's not something that, like, will fundamentally change the way you play the game. Like, things may happen faster, but personally, I think this is a game that's prestige mechanic doesn't exactly wow me. When we get to Norp later, I think that has a much more elegant solution to this, but we'll talk about that in time.
You know, when we were talking about this a little bit, one of the things I kind of thought about incremental games, because everybody loves numbers going up and everything, but I feel like I played Cookie Clicker. I don't know if you have. That just rubbed me the wrong way. I was thinking about trying my own hand at an incremental game, so I'm like, oh, let's see what this one does. But it feels like, yes, you're getting that exponential growth, but the problem with incremental great games a lot for me, besides the fact that I can't stop paying attention to them, but like the problem in general is oftentimes like there's not really an emotional difference between making a million paperclips a second and making a trillion paperclips a second. Like, you do this progress, and now the number goes up faster, but it's at a certain point, it literally doesn't matter which digits are flashing in front of you. It just means, okay, your number is going up faster. You can afford shinier things later on. There were two kind of like inflection points with universal paperclips. First, when you start turning the entire Earth into paperclips, and the next when you start launching things into space by disassembling your own factories and everything. Like, those were cool moments where, yes, the numbers got bigger afterwards, but also, like, there was, some emotional resonance with that. It meant something rather than just like, hey, here's an, I hear you like numbers. This number is 5 times as large as your last number was. Keep on playing.
And I think you would have gotten to the even more resonant emotional moment when the very end of the game comes and you have to tear it all down and you have to click the button to disassemble your final items to create the last few paper clips, and then it's all over. Like, I think that was a really elegant ending, like, statement, you know?
I do remember doing that on the first playthrough, yeah, but that was, you know, at this point, 7 years ago now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I hear you, but it's definitely, it does an interesting thing. I really like this game's ending, and I saw it once this time through. Once I got to that prestige, I was like, I think I got what I needed out of it for this purpose. I really like some of the flavor they add along the way, too. We didn't mention it, but, you know, as you're accumulating resources, you're doing various different projects and researches, and some of them will flash up little anecdotes or quotes from philosophers or scientists up at the top of the screen. And some of that flavor text just sort of helps, I guess, pass the time along the way.
Oh, sure. When you're checking it every 2 minutes, you're like, oh, finally a new quote.
Yeah. Well, if you're me and you check it in and you research 5 things at once, the quotes go a little quicker. But, you know, I still took the time to read them, of course. I had a good time with this one this time through. I'm certainly glad I didn't sit there and camp out on it for the, you know, 6 or so hours it takes to beat it, unlike someone here on this cast. But
yeah, I think around hour 4 or 5 with the drones, I was starting to be like, okay, I know where it's, because I've beaten it before, I know where it's going, and I could stop camping out now.
Yeah.
And the only way to do that is to quit the game. For me.
For you. That's funny. I had no idea you had that sort of approach to these games. It's going to make the rest of this conversation very interesting.
I wouldn't say it's an approach I enjoyed doing. It's just one I couldn't stop myself from doing.
You clockwork oranged yourself. Well, with that, we're going to do a brief 3-word review for each of these games. So do we feel like going into a 3-word for Universal Paperclips?
Sounds good.
All right.
My 3-word review is an argument against. Universal Paperclip was developed as an argument against creating a strong AI with the idea that a super smart AI would be able to destroy the world. While I don't agree with that argument, I do like the game's implementation of it. As a thematic bonus, you, the incremental player, really are trying to make the numbers get bigger and bigger. By Earth, hello, universe of paperclips.
Excellent. My 3-word review is existential thought experiment. Universal Paperclips is perhaps Idle Gaming's most well-known and thought-provoking title, but the Spartan visuals don't wow the player the way the story unfolds or folds as the paperclip does. The ending of the game forces the player to grapple with the exponential levels of production that resulted in the creation of 30 septendecillion paperclips made from all of the matter of the universe. Then it provides the perspective of reverting back down to the basics, where the player must choose to disassemble all of their machines for scrap wire, cover the final 100 inches of wire into paperclips by hand. Universal Paperclips shows that clicker games can provide a unique storytelling experience exclusive to the genre despite their outwardly simple mechanics, a deft use of the genre's mechanics to execute an existential thought experiment.
Oh, very good.
And with that, let's talk about Space Plan. This was my suggestion. Space Plan is I played it on iOS back when it came out in 2017, developed by Jay Collins and published by Devolver Digital. Devolver
Surprising.
Digital.
Surprising.
Yeah, yeah, once again, making an appearance here on the podcast. Surprise, surprise.
This actually seemed like less of a Devolver Digital game than what I typically see out of them, you know what I mean? But maybe they were younger back in 2017, just like us.
I don't know. I feel like it's pretty in keeping with their offerings. It is highly polished. It is, you know, by far the most UI forward and player friendly idle game that I have played personally. I really like the way this game's UI works and sort of the way it pulls you through its story, relying on its writing. In summary, you wake up as a probe orbiting a red planet. You don't know what that red planet is. And you start making potatoes to power your ship and eventually figure out that that red planet, it's not Mars, it's Earth, and it's destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you boot up the spaceship, or the spaceship's AI boots up, and it turns out all of the software libraries are corrupted except the potato library. So that's the only thing that you can materialize on your ship is potatoes.
I love this. And you kept sort of getting slow but sure upgrades into the various types of potatoes you could generate, ones that generate power, ones that launch down to the surface and start creating mega tater structures. It's just it's a fun little way to, you know, I guess obfuscate the fact that what you're incrementing in this game is just complete bullshit. It doesn't matter. You're just making a number of, I guess they're calling it watts or power generation, but it could be anything. The idea here is you're powering up your ship and eventually allowing it to figure out the situation it's in, hopefully to figure out a way to go back in time and save Earth.
So you start off, of course, you got your small potato plants. As Brian said, you go up to your mega potato structures. And as you're doing this, there is this nice little UI of a planet rotating around. There's a little bit, I'm not going to call it strategy so much because it's just something that happens, but when you're in the shadow of the, when you're kind of like the planets between you and the sun, then your solar power generation goes down a lot, which was a nice little touch, even though ultimately, like, it only mattered for the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes or so. Pretty soon after that, you generated more power than you needed there.
Yeah, I like this orbital mechanic thing, though, and it does come back later. I will refute you on that front when you're at the very end of the game.
Not the orbital mechanic, but the shadow instance of it.
No, you're right. The shadow thing doesn't matter after, basically, yeah, as you said, the first 5 minutes. But
yeah, I kind of wish they kept that going. I felt like that, you know, when I'm staring at this for like 3 hours straight, I felt like that kept it a little interesting, but wish they kept it. But as you're going along, you're launching probes down to the planet, and they're showing up there, and your red planet starts to be speckled with little white dots and larger white dots later on too. I thought it was a cool, like, little graphical representation of what you are building.
Yeah, the UI and sort of the visual representation of this game is, like, obviously miles away from what we just experienced in Universal Paperclips, but oddly enough, came out in the same year. I didn't put that together until just reading this on the page. These are both 2017 games. That was interesting.
I really would have pegged Universal Paperclips as being a few years earlier. Like, I thought I remembered playing it earlier, but no, Wikipedia doesn't lie, usually, right?
Yeah, now I want to look that up. but at any rate, with Space Plan, the writing here is a thing that I think differentiates it, because you're sort of having this ongoing dialogue with the AI on the ship, right? Like, somehow you are a different entity than the AI on the ship, right? You are making the decisions for that AI. You are talking to them. They are kind of funny, tongue-in-cheek, entertaining writing. They have a word outputter, which is the thing they're talking to you through, an idea lister, that is the thing that lists all of the things, and a thing maker, which of course is how you get your potatoes.
All them potatoes.
Yeah, it's just a very, like, sort of tongue-in-cheek and cheeky writing style, which I thought made it kind of fun.
I also really enjoyed the music for this game, too. Like, I felt like it kind of got you in a little zone over there, and you could even, like, kind of click on a button, keeping time with the beat a little bit, and that gave you a small bonus for doing that, too.
Yeah, definitely some serious production value, at least in terms of idle games with this one. you know, I liked the UI, not just for when you're at your probe and doing the quote-unquote planet view, but also the solar system view, and then later on, you got some much more interesting views of the systems that you were in. But this game overall, I think, was just sort of a step in more of, like, what does an idle game look like if it's actually trying to do like a quote unquote interstellar experience, you know? I think this is basically like the idle game version of Interstellar.
Haven't seen Interstellar myself, so I will let that reference slide without comment. But you do go interstellar in this game. You start off around Earth, as you find out, and eventually you make enough potatoes that you break... Yeah, this was a nice joke. Your idea is you start shooting potatoes at the sun until its mass increases and somehow time travel. And that's how you're going to solve the problem, because the computer who calls this thing an idea lister has come up with a plan to save Earth.
Yep. You create a black hole and you get into the event horizon and back in time.
So you I like how the computer's like, don't worry about it, don't think about it too much, let's just do it.
Yeah, and you do, and so you end up in back in time, but the world is dominated by potato beings, and those potato beings are obviously this means that you have failed. You have gone back in time, not to a previous history of your known Earth, but of a world perhaps influenced by all of the millions of potatoes you've launched into the sun.
The fabric of space-time is potato-shaped now.
That's right. And so you continue down this path, and these potatoes eventually reveal the fact that they have created some sort of dimension-hopping apparatus. And so you go around the solar system unraveling the planets in the solar system and revealing the various pieces of the dimension-hopping device.
I did kind of like this part of the game where you have to like land potatoes in from orbit on certain buttons on the planet.
Yeah, it was actually kind of like a shooter at this point, you know, like it was a rudimentary one. But there was active participation required here with the clicking, which I'm sure you, as a person who can't look away from a clicker game, appreciated.
I know, there was something to do besides just click a button. You can click a button at the right time.
Yeah, to a purpose, a greater purpose, I suppose. But yeah, I think this is I like the sort of way that they changed the way that you need to interact with this clicker to, you know, click in a specific time. You know, it seems so rudimentary when you say it like that. I like the way they make it click at a certain time. I don't know. Like this game to me, like. It lowered the barrier to entry, right? Like the pretty pictures on the screen, the more straightforward goals it has in mind. Like Universal Paperclips to me feels like sort of a very not handholdy version of what Space Plan did in a much more friendly way.
I could see that. Speaking of friendly, one thing I did really like about Space Plan was the this idea of like batteries or whatever, where if you closed out the game, it would still get you more potatoes, more watts for a certain amount of time afterwards. And that actually meant I could walk away from the game, because it's like, okay, I'm still gonna get my potatoes, still gonna get my numbers going up, I can do other things now. So I think I played Space Plan probably closer to how most people play incremental games than the other two.
Oh, I gotta ask then, did that like actually work for you? Did you like that? Or was it like still just in the back of your mind scratching at your brain in an unpleasant way?
I would say it let me get through the game quicker.
Well, that's good. Hey, can't argue with that. But yeah, at the end of the day, you do end up dimension hopping through various dimensions. The game flashes up a bunch of weird mind's eye sort of versions of what other dimensions look like in the Space Plan potato infested universe. And, they play some spacey music, and then you're done. You're a mind forever voyaging throughout the multi-dimensional abyss, I suppose. Kind of a bleak ending, actually, to this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the story at the beginning where they're like, what happened to Earth? But I feel like they never really paid
resolved
off
it.
On
it,
or
they
mentioned
didn't.
It again.
You
and they didn't
just...
even try to lampshade it. They're just like, oh, forget about that story. Potato people.
And now you're lost in a multidimensional journey of your own devising. good luck. It is kind of an unsatisfactory ending. Like, I don't know, like the first time that I played it, I was like, huh, that's interesting. And then I put it down and didn't think about it again. And this time around, when I got back there, I was like, huh, I remember being more satisfied with this ending last time. and maybe I think the problem is I wasn't thinking about it too hard. And this time I was like, well, you know, I got to the ending and I was like, well, what did that actually mean? It turns out probably nothing.
I think for me, the thing is Space Plan, it wanted to tell a story. Like, this was what it was trying to do. It's like incremental game plus story and plus solid UI and all that too. But the storyline, especially once you started going through the black hole, I felt like it was like, eh.
This it lost steam. Yeah.
Yeah,
it
kind of got to be a Shaggy Dog story a little bit.
I agree. It just, one thing led to another, but not to any particular purpose, and it never really brought it back to meaning anything, which, you know, idle games. But the weird
it's
thing
a
about...
a parable for idle games.
It kind of is, but... The weird thing about this idle game is it does have an ending, right? Like, usually when you get to that dimension part, like a la Universal Paperclips, they just say, and you're in a new dimension, start again. But this game specifically rolls to credits once you start that. You know, there is no prestige.
No, I think that's a good move for the game, too. I don't know. I don't feel like it necessarily was trying to make a commentary on idle games with anything, but I think it was a good move for it to end.
I agree. Like, they could have just said, and you're in a new dimension, start over. Or they could say, there are infinite dimensions. You don't need to start again. Just start the game over. If you really want to play again that bad, you know what to do. But I think we know what to do now, and that's give a 3-word review.
All right, my 3-word review for Space Plan is waiting for story. Space Plan wants to tell a story about a spaceship and a potato through the medium of an incremental game. This one didn't land for me, though. I liked the first half of the game, but the second half didn't work as an incremental game or as a story. It trashed all my spud satellites and made me wait for the next bit of narrative, punctuated by a frantic rebuild. It promised a little bit of mystery, then left you with potato people as a punchline. Final review needs more seasoning.
That's good. I like that. I can't disagree with it, but my 3-word review is perfect entry point. Space Plan's short runtime, defined finish line, and attractive user interface make it a great entry point to this genre. It also has a wonderfully tongue-in-cheek tone and writing that is entertaining enough to pull you through the game's 5 to 6 hour runtime. Looking back at the experience of playing this game with its focus on writing, streamlined interactions, emphasis on storytelling, dawns on me that Space Plan is incremental gaming's walking simulator, and I mean that in the most flattering way possible. Highly recommended by me.
Does a game whose genre is click a button need that much of an entry point?
I mean, yes, kind of, because, like, I don't know, have you seen the clickers out there? Speaking of, let's talk about the NORP epilogue.
The NORP epilogue.
So, this is the reason we started going down this pathway in the first place, if I'm not mistaken. The NORP epilogue being the most recent of the games we're covering here. 2023 December release, number 4 new Steam game of December in 2023 in terms of copies sold. Created by a Norway-based dev by the name of Maiko.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. I didn't know it did that well on Steam. Good for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think it's well-deserved. Like, It strikes me that we've skipped like several rounds of evolution talking about two 2017 games and then jumping directly into 2023, late 2023, mind you. But this is a game that is much different than the other two we've talked about because the incremental mechanics to me are lampshaded heavily by the fact that this is basically a management game.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, I mean, Let's lay up what this game actually is, right? So you are in charge of these little guys called NORPs. They are continually trying to break apart this rock in order to create shards, which you accumulate to build them things that allow them to break the rock faster to get more shards, to build more things, to break the rock faster, and on and on and on and on. There is an end to this game. I did not get it. It's actually pretty involved. Did you?
No. I played this game and enjoyed it, but did not get close to the end.
Yeah, same here. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I think this is a... I think one of the main things this has evolved upon is in its visuals. This is a very visually, I guess, visual forward incremental game. And I won't say that saying it's like got AAA production values or anything. It's white on black with some splashes of color here and there. And the Norps are basically little dots with smiley faces on them. But they are very charismatic.
Yeah, I think so. Especially with a lot of other incremental games, you are mostly looking at numbers. This game struck me in that all of the kind of information about how well you're doing is there on the screen shown inside the Norp world. Like, there are numbers you can look at, but really what you're looking at is like all the shards flying off and how fast they're being carted away by the runners, which is an interesting thing we should talk about too. There's this kind of like pull-push mechanic going on there, but the buildings you build, all the Norps hanging out, all the damage, all the attacks on the rock is all a very much like a visual sort of thing.
It's a great call out. There's basically two main numbers you're tracking. It's amount of damage you're doing to the rock and amount of shards you're collecting from the damage you're doing. So obviously you want to make sure that the damage outpaces the collection, right? You don't want your collectors to be doing nothing. But how much you want it to outpace the collection is key here. Because at certain intervals, the rock will undergo what's called a contraction if there's enough idle shards sitting next to it uncollected.
If the mountain of shards is big enough, then yeah, the contraction happens.
Yeah, it'll reabsorb the shards, all of those go away, and it generates a material called...
Zybellium?
And that allows you to get sort of special upgrades that will drastically empower your Norps. And if this is sounding complex for an idle game, it is. And it kind of shocks me that this is basically the work of some 20-year-old solo dev working on it on and off in his spare time for a few years.
No, good point. This guy knows what he's doing well. Want to see more in the Norp.
The Norpiverse.
But yeah, you get your standard sort of things, like you can build a archery range, you can build a gun store, you can build a drone shop or an academy, a garden where they grow weird stuff, weird flowers. But the Zybellium, when you get it, unlocks the cool upgrades, like, oh, this upgrade with one Zybellium, you can replace your archer's arrows with rockets instead. Or this one lets the jetpack slamming guys time shift backwards so they can slam it twice and do even more damage. And where you spend your Zybellium, because, you know, I've probably gotten between 4 and 6 in the 3 different games I've played. So you have to choose where you spend it. Unlike shards, which are, for all intents and purposes, infinite, the Zybellium doesn't necessarily come back, because each time there's a contraction event, the rock grows in power and starts sucking back shards at a faster rate from your mountain.
You can think of this as the rock increasing in density, and it's sort of its gravitational center getting stronger, and it reabsorbing rocks at a greater rate, like you said, like Josh just said. And I think this is really interesting, because despite the fact that we've just named like 3 different axes that this game is progressing on, you know, you're gaining Norps, you're gaining shards to get more Norps, you're empowering the Norps to get more shards faster, to outpace the reabsorption. There is yet another axis on which you are evolving throughout the course of this game, and that is the accrual of talent points. In each game, based on the rate of your collection of shards, as I understand, you're accruing talent points. And over the course of a game or two, you will accrue 1 to 2 to 3 talent points. And then after a contraction, you are given the option to basically say, all right, I'm done. And all of your upgrades and all of your Norps go away. And you can allocate those talent points into what they call the talent obelisk, I think, or the talent wall, which is basically a skill tree. Mm-hmm. And it gives you bonuses and sort of allow you to create a build for how you want to build out your Norp society.
One interesting thing with these prestige points, too, is during my last game, my build was not as optimal, and I gained no prestige points, even though I got to the same point. So I think my, you know, to get like your seventh prestige point, or I think this would have been my 10th prestige point, you have to have a certain rate of collection. It's not just start a new game, get some more prestige. But it's like, no, you have to earn that point, which actually I appreciate.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Josh. And I think it sounds like we got to about the same place. I think I got to, 12 or 13 talent points before I was done. And
I knew I should have clicked harder.
The interesting thing is, you do still start this game by clicking on that fucking rock.
Rite of passage. Although I did appreciate this when I played the second or third time, but you do the first click and it's a big explosion of like, oh, here's all these little things. And then you got to click them one by one to get them into your shard scoop.
Yeah, I like that. So you have to, you basically have to like show the Norps how it's done. You click the rock, the things fly off. You click the shards, they go into the collector. And then from there, you're off to the races and the Norps start doing it themselves, as long as you've built them. But I really, you know, as we both have just said, I really like this prestige mechanics, this prestige mechanic, because it allows you to, you know, be experimental and determine if you're actually improving with the way that you're allocating those talent points run over run. And it will tell you, because if you pull a Josh and don't get any talent points on a run, you know you fucked up.
Or at least you didn't do better than you did before.
That's fucking up, Josh. You got more talent points and you got less output.
I tried to go with the primitive body slammers just to see what I could do with that on the new run. I'm like, oh, I'll put a bunch of talent points towards them, but nope. Should have gone with the jetpacks.
No, it's true. I feel like the arrows are the way to go. At least where I was, it was getting like fire and ice arrows and allowing them to somehow coexist. But you know, we're talking Bush League strategies because neither of us beat this game. maybe soon. I wouldn't mind revisiting this one. Honestly, it is. As I mentioned up top, this is the first like incremental game I played on PC. These are usually reserved for mobile for me. But I think I might try some other highly rated incremental games after this. Like I didn't mind the push and pull here with regards to my schedule, because, you know, unlike you, I'm able to just walk away.
It's a key skill for incremental games is the ability to not play them.
It's true. I don't know what that says about the genre, but I want to say something else about this game, though, and that's that this is the only one of these games that I noticed the music on, mostly because I don't really listen to music when I play games on mobile. But this game had a really fun sort of MIDI versions of classical music, and I posted one or two that I recognized in our little chat about the game. I thought it was pretty well done.
Yeah, I think it did a good job. Simpler sound effects, too, but, you know, lets you know how fast your Gatling guns are going.
Right, you can hear all of the explosions. And what I do like is that they allow you to either remove or mute all of the sound effects and just keep the classical music when you minimize the game to go do something else. So I would usually just leave the classical music on because I didn't mind having that playing at a low volume while I was, you know, puttering around. And that was fun. It was a nice sort of quality of life feature. Clearly, this developer has played other incremental games and absorbed some of the best practices. Unlike us.
Unlike us. Fair enough.
Well, with that, maybe we give a quick 3-word review of the NORP epilogue.
My 3-word review is spectacle, strategy, screensaver. NORPS sells itself as a visual incremental game, which was a touch that I loved. The game stores your progress not as an ever-increasing number, but as an explosion of fireworks and color. As someone who is not able to tear themselves away from games he's playing, even games that want you to move away from them, I appreciated the visual explosions of fireworks and everything going on, and enjoyed the strategy of selecting builds and going through talent points. I would call this the thinking man's incremental game. Mindless clicking doesn't do it.
I agree. My three-word review is prestige incremental management. The NORP epilogue is, I think, the first PC-based prestige incremental game that I've played. Usually idle gaming is a mobile experience for me, since it's easy to pull a device out of your pocket and check in. But I have to admit that having my NORPs working away in the background while I worked away in the real world was oddly comforting. I appreciate what NORP brought to the table mechanically, taking a management sim aspect and layering it over the tried and true incremental game formula, and the NORP epilogue has piqued in me the interest in what has been happening in this genre, as it's evolved over the past few years, and has inspired me to seek out more interesting experiences in the same vein and on the same platform. So, look out, PC gaming incremental games. I'm coming for you.
Very nice. All right, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, then please share it with folks you think might enjoy it as well. Feel free to drop us a note at pixelatedplaygrounds@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter at pixelplaypod. And for us here at Pixelated Playgrounds, I'm Josh Galecki.
And I'm Brian Skirsha. Take care and keep on idling.
You know, one thing, you mentioned that NORPS was kind of a management game, had a bit of the management sim in it, and there were choices you could make about what you set your buildings to. Like, the archers could do just regular arrows or fire arrows or ice arrows, and you could change that part of it mid-game. There were a couple of times and a couple of prestige talents that I had where this made a difference, because the damage that your NORPs did to the rock wasn't just like, how many rocks am I getting out of this rock? It was also the range that that damage would do. The body slammers, I think, would just, the rocks would show up right next to the rock. I think the guns would shoot it and it'd be far away, closer to the scooper, so your runners wouldn't have to go as far. And there was actually a little bit of management, like when you were trying to trigger another contraction event, you're like, okay, I need to tell my runners to take a break here. I need to let the mountain grow up. I need to like focus on close over here. I need to focus on far away range over here. And there were ways to kind of tweak that within the game, which I think lends itself to that management stuff you were talking about.
Yeah, I should have probably mentioned that a little bit more when we were talking about NORP, but you basically, as you're building housing and accumulating NORPs, you're assigning them to specific roles, I suppose, is a good way to put it, either on the damage dealing side or the collecting side. And as you mentioned, you can turn them off and on. So you can say, take a break, gatherers, or take a break, damage dealers, and allow things to balance out in whatever way you so choose. That is a great point. And I think on top of all of the strategic choices you're making about just how you set and forget, there's also a more active element in this game than there is in most idle games with regards to that active choice of start gathering now, stop gathering now, start dealing this type of damage here. You know, you can even change like the type of arrows your archers use, as you said. So there's more going on here from a strategic layer, I think, than the others. It's just a more fleshed out game from a mechanical perspective than the other two.
One of the talents you unlock automatically, as you're probably in your third or fourth game, lets you go even further, where you get different bonuses to, like, the body slammers will get a bonus if you have a certain number of runners, or the runners will get a bonus if you have a certain number of psychers, or things like that, which you can toggle around and open up even more options, which, great idea when somebody's like used to the game already. You throw them more options and ways to tweak things around, especially if you play it all the time like me and don't walk away.
Yes, the idle game that caters to the very non-idle player. So I gotta ask, do you think, like, if you ever got a smartphone capable of doing so, that you would try playing a game like this on a smartphone, or would you just think you'd spend your time with your face glued to your phone instead?
Yeah, I think it would suck away my attention still. Like, no, I mean, that's why I held out so long on using a smartphone, was because I knew that would suck away my attention, and something I watch these days too. Putting an incremental game on a smartphone for me would not make it any better.
Oh, man. Well, it's a good thing you probably just keep refraining from that then. We're going to need to get some like parental controls for your wife to put on your phone so you don't just have an iPhone taped to your face when eventually you do end up getting one. Because I know it'll happen one day, Josh. It will.